Spring is here, and we have updates from basically across the board. We got football as spring camp gets ready to open up. We got some quarterback recruiting updates, as well as a new commitment for FSU football. And then basketball, Michael, March Madness is upon most of the teams, not Florida State, but we do have a new era beginning in Florida State with a new basketball coach that's been hired after 23 seasons under Leonard Hamilton. So we're going to talk about that as well. And then baseball struggled, had their streak snapped. Can they bounce back this weekend against Boston College? So, you know, springtime is always a fun time for sports before we hit that kind of dead period in the summer. The weather's nice. It's time, you know, I was back outside doing some grilling last night. So, man, just I love springtime. And so we got some stuff to talk about from across the Florida State landscape here. So excited to get into this one for you guys. But before we do that, Michael, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, Jesse. Good to be here. Yeah, we got, you know, got some tinkering here. I know in the springtime it gets really hard because, you know, you're just jonesing for news and information. You're ready for football and you're a week away from that. And of course, it'd be nice if, you know, if FSU basketball was in March Madness, but it's been March Sadness. But, you know, now we're going to March Hopeful with Luke Louts on the ground. And then, of course, FSU baseball giving us all the joys, except for maybe, you know, this past midweek. But we'll talk about that. Can't wait to jump into the show.
Yeah, hopefully this is one of the last times that we don't have basketball to talk about in March. But, you know, again, man, like you said, it does get kind of dry out there when before you hit that spring camp. And then summer is even tougher. So, you know, guys, as a podcast, I promise you we are scraping the barrel for every little bit of football content that we can bring you. And so let's start with a late addition to Tribe 25. Now, we had pretty much thought Florida State had put the bow on their 2025 class, but they do make a late addition with a quarterback commit. And this is an interesting one, Michael, because depending on how the next few months go in the court system, this is, you know, he's coming on as a preferred walk-on is what I'm being told. But once the house settlement and the 105 roster limit goes into effect, he will count against your roster limit. So, you know, the walk-ons is something that's supposed to be going away. So you do have to talk about him because he is going to count as one of your roster spots. And that is Gavin Markey, 2025 quarterback out of Jefferson, Georgia here. And this is a guy that feels pretty much like a Gus Malzahn addition, right? Perfectly fit for that offense. He's more of a kind of a take a chance and see what you can get, maybe some upside, maybe just getting some good depth to the position here. But, you know, as you make this transition to the Gus Malzahn offense, you kind of need some guys that are built for that system. And he feels like one of them that can, if you're going to have a guy that, because, you know, here's the thing I think that's interesting when we talk about, oh, well, he's just a walk-on or he's just this or he's just that. You know, Gus Malzahn took a team to the national championship with a converted DB at quarterback. So it's not always like he has to have a five-star Cam Newton type of guy to have a great quarterback in this offense. But to me, Markey is an interesting prospect here because he does have the size to be a bruising runner at 6'2", 235 pounds. He has a decent combination of speed, power, and athleticism. According to a recruiting profile I found online, he does run around a 4.6 40, which is not slow for a quarterback of his size, a 37.4-inch vertical, and he benches over 300 pounds. So, I mean, the kid, you know, look, this is purely a joke, tongue-in-cheek, but somebody I saw on Twitter called him Timu Tebow, and
I like it.
I almost died when I heard that because it's funny, but it could be true, man. I mean, you look at the kid's stats. He's a two-year starter there at Jefferson. He led them to a 24-4 record over the past two seasons. During his senior year, he was awarded first-team All-State and first-team All-District honors, had a 54% completion rate with 1,547 passing yards, 16 touchdowns, and 9 interceptions, while adding 1,660 yards and 24 touchdowns on the ground. He's got around 4,800 all-purpose yards over the last 2 years and 69 total touchdowns. So to me, obviously, you can see the passing has to get a little bit better if you're going to, you know, be a D1 type of quarterback here. Now, again, some of that could go to what are your receivers? Because when I watched some of his highlight film, there were some pretty decent throws that just hit their hands and were dropped. So you don't, you know, we don't know what all goes into that. But I will say this about him. When you watch his film, at first you're like, because here's the honest fact. When he first committed, I was like, who? And then and then when I went to look him up, I was like, really? Because there was no, wasn't even a 247 profile. There was no On3 profile. He was not rated by any recruiting services. He had a profile with Rivals. Some of his other offers here were like Murray State, Virginia Military Institute, a lot of these smaller schools. So you're like, you know, what are we doing here? Right. And so, I mean, you know, quarterback recruiting is typically tough under Gus Malzahn anyway. But then you turn on his film and you're like, all right, well, maybe I can see this. I mean, the kid will run through contact. I mean, we joke about the Timu Tebow, but when you watch him, he's a Tebow type of guy, man. He is a hard-nosed physical runner with some decent speed. He will run through some tackles. He will run over some guys, and he's got a pretty big arm. So I think this is someone who's going to be very much a depth/developmental piece for the future here. But I don't know that he ever starts for you on the field. You know, maybe you could see like a Taysom Hill type of guy with the Saints where like you bring him in for some short yardage or some goal line packages or things like that. Maybe there's a position change in his future. But I do think when you talk about from a Gus Malzahn perspective, knowing that offense that you're going to be running, and then you watch his film, you know, I mean, hey, Jared Verse was a zero star. So let's not focus on star ratings. But I think when you turn on the film and you understand the offensive system that we're going to be running, I can see the take.
Yeah, I could understand why they would add him to the mix. You know, just thinking like this is an opportunity to see what the development could look like. Again, like you've mentioned already, he does have that, you know, Tebow-esque-like style of just a bruiser who can throw the ball. You know, obviously the accuracy, the being able to read and lead the receivers has to get better. But over time, you know, maybe that is something that ends up happening. Maybe in 3 to 5 years, because let's be real, they're staying forever now.
Yeah.
He might be a 25-year-old with a 401k and 3 kids and be able to get on the starting field. Also, you could see, like you said, that kind of the quarterback from the Saints, Taysom Hill, or it could be a potential move to a tight end like situation that then they could use him in that H-back situation, trick play situation, something of that nature. I'll be curious to see what ends up happening with him, because I don't think Florida State would just waste a roster spot knowing what we're moving to in the era of college football that we're in on a kid that's never, ever going to see the field. So I'll be interested to see what they do to develop him.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, one of the things that I did think about when they brought him on is Brian Courtney, who was a high school quarterback kind of played a little bit of he played some defense, too. I mean, he was kind of just the best athlete on his team. And then he came in and made the transition to tight end here at Florida State. And so I think this could be one where, like you said, he could be someone that you could use in different forms or ways. And then I also think, you know, when you look at it, Castellanos is only here for 1 year, pretty much. And then you also have the 2026 recruiting that we're about to get into, where you have some uncertainty there, too. You're still looking to replace the Smeagol kid that decommitted from you. So, I don't know that this is going to be a big impact guy for you. But in the future, I think it, one, gives you added depth for a guy that fits the system very well. And that's something that he talked about when he committed. And then I also think that you have that potential upside. I mean, if you get his arm figured out, you know, the guys, you know, he could be pretty decent for you. Now, let's stay in the vein of quarterback recruiting, because we started with a quarterback talk here, because this is a big subject for Florida State. Like right now, as we just talked about, you are transitioning into that Gus Malzahn offense. And so what is the future of the position going to look like? Because obviously you brought in Castellanos to stabilize the ship, you know, over 1 year or so. And then you have Brock Glenn, who we're still waiting to kind of see, is Brock Glenn ever going to turn into anything or not? Right. You have Trevor Jackson there that is MIA essentially. Like that's one of the things I'm waiting to see, like in spring, is this guy still can he be what we think he can be? Because he looks like he was going to be great for that offense. And then you also have Kevin Sperry there. But you're still trying to figure out the future of that quarterback room. And so you have two big names on the recruiting board for Florida State that have scheduled visits. So we're going to do a quick quarterback recruiting update for 2026 right now. As like we said, you're still searching for that replacement for Brady Smeagol out of that 2026 class. And the top name on the list is Landon Duckworth, 4-star quarterback. This kid is probably a number one on the recruiting most wanted list for Florida State because of the importance of that position, because of the caliber of recruit that you have here. This is the one they really want. Now, he has an official visit scheduled over the summer. from June 13th to June the 15th. Now, Florida State is in a good spot with him because of his prior relationship with Gus from his time back at UCF. Keep in mind, UCF was actually listed as the favorite to land Duckworth before Gus left for Tallahassee. And then once he left, that obviously that relationship, or with UCF anyway, kind of fell through. He committed to South Carolina, but has since decommitted from South Carolina. And he has seen his recruitment kind of take off here. So there are some more big fish that have jumped into this pond with you. So you kind of have the inside track with Gus in your back pocket, but the competition just got a lot harder because, I mean, this kid has won. He's taken off. He's one of the on three, said that he was one of the top three remaining quarterbacks available for 2026. And so some of the names that are also scheduled for visits are Georgia, South Carolina, and Ole Miss. So again, you have some tough competition there. Now, when I was reading some of his quotes, he did say that he is willing to commit before the season starts if things feel right. And he is talking to some other programs as well, but those are the top four that he is focused on right now. And if things are still kind of uncertain, he will take his time and he will wait till either during or after the season to make his commitment. But again, man, this is the guy that you want. He is perfect for that Gus Malzahn on offense. And you got some, you're going to have to go toe to toe with some of these big programs. But if you can get him, not only is that a huge win for Florida State, but that's a huge win on the recruiting trail. You know, and this is something that we talked about on the last episode with high school recruiting, where we were hoping that bringing Gus in, a guy who has recruited at a high level at a Power Five program like Auburn, did great things at Central Florida there in the recruiting aspect. This is where you want to see him kind of come in and be like, look, this is where we can turn high school recruiting around for Florida State. And man, this would be a massive feather in your cap if they could win this recruiting battle.
Yeah, this would be a huge pickup. And more so, this could be the redemption tour for the quarterback room at Florida State. Let's just be real. Let's just be very real, Jesse. You know, Mike Norvell, for all his goodness and energy and all the things he's done outside of Jordan Travis, he has struck coal, you know, when it comes to the QB room. Obviously, Brock Glenn is still there, but man, we've seen him, you know, the past two seasons get into games and it's not been very good. You know, obviously the Smeagol kid decommitted. I mean, we could go through the list of quarterbacks who came to Florida State under Mike Norvell, have not panned out, transferred out, gone somewhere else, has not worked out. And so what we're hoping is that Gus Malzahn, even though he has not had a great history with quarterbacks per se, the recruiting of these quarterbacks and hopefully developing them in the right system could help turn the tide. And Landon Duckworth would be the beginning of that. It would be a huge pickup to get this kid into the fold and then to see what happens, because TC, Thomas Castellanos, is a one-year rental. And after that, we don't know. And so it'd be great to have somebody who fits the system, who could do what that quarterback's going to be asked to do, and is a high caliber four-star player coming in from the high school ranks.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree there, because again, like you said, you kind of need to finally hit on one of these quarterbacks. I mean, you've brought in some highly rated guys that haven't really done a whole lot. And I think it's interesting too, because, you know, it's hard to recruit in that Gus Malzahn offense, that system. That's why you saw Croman Hawk hit the portal and things like that. That's why you saw Smeagol decommit. But I think when you, like, if you can put on film, like, man, this is how we can be successful with you, like that Cam Newton type of season where he can still go to the NFL and you can be successful in the system that you're in. And, you know, again, we've talked about this before, where a lot of the modern NFL game is now going to these mobile type of quarterbacks. And so I think you, if you sell it right, it can be a good sell.
Right.
And I am also knowing the quarterback struggles, because like you said, man, you got to call it like it is. You got to be realistic. I think it is nice to see an offense that isn't so heavily reliant on the quarterback position to where if you don't nail it every single time, it's not going to sink your ship.
Correct.
Now, the other name that's going to be on campus coming up even sooner than that is Bo Bentley, four-star quarterback out of Texas. He is supposed to be on a visit on March the 22nd. I believe that's also Legacy Weekend there as well. His recruitment is another one that has really heated up in the latest on 300 rankings. He went from unranked all the way up to 45th. Now, Florida State was one of the early ones on him. It kind of seemed like after they offered, he really started to blow up with offers and all this type of stuff. But this is another one that's going to be a tough pull, because he is, you know, he's already visited with Oklahoma. He's supposed to be on campus with LSU this weekend. He's got a visit coming up to Ohio State Georgia and Georgia Tech as well, all in the month of March. So this could be a little bit of a tough poll here. It's going to be a big competition. But I think at the end of the day, I mean, you're getting him on campus, and that's really all you can ask for to start with here, is just to get him in the fold and get a look at him and let him get a look at you and start building that relationship so you can see how things go. But, man, you got two – in the next couple months, you got two really, really big quarterback targets on the board that are going to be in Tallahassee. So, you know, you need to really kind of find yourself in a good place with one of these two for 2026 if you really want to find success going into the future.
Yeah, you got to hit on one of these. You got to get one of these to commit. And that means being willing to probably pay. Let's just be real. You know, relationships are relationships. So right now the name of the game is pay. So you got to be willing to pay. Obviously, I don't think either of these guys you break the bank for. These are not break the bank types of guys.
Yeah.
But you have to be willing to at least crack the bank, okay? Because you need this quarterback room to begin to work itself out if you're going to attract other stars. As we all know, wide receivers, running backs, offensive linemen, they want to know who they're going to play with at the quarterback position. Is this guy going to be a guy they're willing to get in the trench hole with? So either Bo or Landon, you know, these are guys that you are going to want to maybe open up the checkbook just a slight bit more to try to secure their services. And it seems like the mentality from Florida State moving into this from this past season into the offseason into now is that, yes, we are going to put a more emphasis on high school recruiting, which means we're going to pay a little bit more. So hopefully that will begin to pan itself out, especially in the quarterback room.
Yeah, and I think you touched on a point that's very important. It's not even so much what you get out of the quarterback. It's what it does for everything else in recruiting. I mean, no offense to the Gavin Markey kid. Like, he could turn out to be the next Tim Tebow. We don't know. Right. And, you know, I hate even comparing him to a rival because those were some painful years.
They were.
They really were. But at the same time, like, no offense to the kid. He might turn out to be great, but he's not moving the needle with other recruits. Right. If you land a Landon Duckworth, it's going to finally look like, okay, Florida State's on to something here, and you're going to attract bigger fish around him. So I think that's important, man. So you want to land one of these. Now, like we said, with Gus Malzahn's offense not being very heavily dependent on the quarterback, do you go out and pay crazy money like, you know, Carson Beck type of money at Miami? No, I don't think so, which, speaking of, that boy ain't focused. That's a side note here. With moved down there to be with his girlfriend. And hey, look, we're not TMZ here, but it is worth mentioning. They did break up. So my man is apparently focused on them boats and booties that I talked about before and not so much football. So I think that is something that's kind of interesting to watch here. My man doesn't seem too focused on football down there in South Beach with that 7-figure paycheck. But now let's talk about spring camp that is going to be opening up on March 19th. But before we do that, let me bring you a quick word from today's sponsor, and that is Roback. Now, we talk about elite quarterback play. Look, Roback has elite gear. This is some of the best gear you'll find on the shelf. They got some new Florida State stuff out with some hoodies, with some quarter zips, with some polos that are very unique. And man, it is top quality stuff. Like I said on the last episode, I have a couple Roback things, and it is my go-to because it is my favorite stuff. You can really tell the difference whenever you put it on. And you can save 20% on your first order by using code SPEAR at checkout. So make sure you go visit Roback and check out their FSU line here. It's really good stuff. So appreciate you guys supporting those that support us. Now, spring camp opens on March 19th, and we did a previous episode, which I can link to at the end of this, where we went through and basically gave a spring camp breakdown, what we're watching for from every single position, some of the overarching things here, you know, just from a broad scheme, like the physicality in practice, what it's going to look like under this new staff. We talked about all that stuff. So make sure you guys go back and check that out. But what we're going to do today, because again, like we said, there's not a whole lot of football meat on the bone here, which thankfully spring camp opens up next week. So we should have some actual football to talk about, which I'm excited about. So today, Michael, we're going to talk about our top five players you're most excited to see in spring camp. And if you're watching on YouTube, as we go through this list, drop your top players that you're excited to see in spring camp, because there are some new ones, some young guys, some older returning guys, some new transfers. So that's what we're going to go through right now. We're going to give you who we're most excited about and a little bit of why we're excited. So I'll kick us off, Michael, here with my number one, and that is Squirrel White. And I know that people are going to, you know, maybe that's not at the top of most people's list, but the reason I have him at my number one is I truly do believe, look, I love Deuce Robinson. I love Hakeem Williams. I love all the other guys that we have in this wide receiver room, B.J. Gibson, you know, LaWayne McCoy. All these guys are great. If Squirrel White is healthy, I think he has the potential to be an immediate X factor for this team. Again, game one against Alabama, 2023, he put up, I think it was 110, 120 yards against Alabama and a touchdown. This guy has a chance to make an immediate impact. I'm not going to say that he's going to be like a Keon Coleman type of impact, but I mean, the potential's there when you look at his past level of production. I mean, he put up more yards, I think, in 2023 at Tennessee than Keon did with us in 2023 at Florida State. So I'm excited to see, is he back to 100%? Because he was banged up last year.
Yeah.
And just, man, what that speed looks like on the field, because I think this guy can be a game changer for this offense this season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he of all the wide receivers has the ability to take the top off of defenses very quickly, very quickly.
Yeah.
Okay, so my number one exciting thing to see this spring is not, I'm just going to take all five of them and combine them into one player. My number one, what I'm excited to finally see, is a cohesive, coherent, and collaborative offensive line that we're not switching out. That's what I, that's my number one. And the reason why is because I believe that no unit on the offensive side is going to have more to do with the success of the offense this season than the offensive line. We all know that. We talk about it all the time. That's why they're my number one.
It's funny, when you told me this before the show, I was like, dang, I should have put that on my list. Ooh, man. And the thing is, there's so many new pieces to look for and so many pieces that I think are going to be really good. And on top of that, you're also seeing these guys perform under a new coach
who
I feel very good about. I think Herb Hand is going to really transform this offensive line room. But like you said, man, all the players, at least offensively, that we want to talk about that we're excited about seeing, it's going to fall flat if you don't figure this offensive line out, because for everything that this team was or was not last year, it all started up front. It didn't matter if the quarterback was good. It didn't matter if you had Jordan or Jameis back there. It didn't matter if you had Keon or Johnny or me out there. They didn't have time to do anything. So you got to fix it up front. So I think that is a great, great pick to see in the spring here. My number two here is Azumain Chroma. And I just think, man, this kid is different. Like, this was a huge recruiting win for Florida State to start with, to flip him from Georgia at the last minute. But when you watch his film, this kid's different. And like, don't get me wrong, I'm excited about Cam Davis. I'm excited about all these guys behind a better offensive line. But man, I think Chroma has the ability to come in and be a game changer, a real contributor, even as a freshman. And so I'm excited to see what that looks like. I mean, again, keep in mind, Gus Malzahn even talked about, when in his introductory press conference, when they asked him about Chroma and getting somebody like that, he said, look, I think it was Michael Dyer was the MVP of the national championship game when they went in with Cam Newton there, and he was a freshman.
Yep.
So just because this kid's a freshman doesn't mean he can't be a big part of this offense. So I'm excited to see what he looks like, because I think he might be the best one you got in the group.
Listen, this is my number two as well, because that dude, I mean, gives me shades of Greg Jones and Davin Cook combined together. Yeah. I mean, that dude looked like he was born ready to run over a bunch of people. He probably punched his way out of his mom's womb. Right. Like, I mean, gosh darn it, that boy's so big. And he looks powerful. And the way he moves on the field in those pads, if you look at his high school film, my goodness. So, yeah, I mean, look. I'm excited about Cam Davis progressing from his freshman season. I know that room is stacked. You got Sam Singleton, Kaziah Holmes. You got all those guys. But this guy, Uzma, brings the star, at least the high school star power we've been desperate for since Dalvin Cook, right? And so I think he's going to be excitable enough to show us that. So I'm excited to see what he can do this spring.
Yeah, my man came out the womb and stiff-armed the doctor on the way out. So for my number three, I'm going to move over to the defense, and that's going to be James Williams, defensive end transfer from Nebraska. And the reason I'm so excited to see him is because he came with a lot of hype. I mean, when your nickname is the sack man or, you know, whatever, you're going to need to live up to that. And at the same time, we talked about this before in our spring preview, which, again, I encourage you guys to go, we go more in depth on this stuff. He was a rotational package player at Nebraska. Now, he may have been good, but he was good in those packages and those rotations. Florida State needs him to be a starter now. And while I don't want to go into the details of this, because we still don't know whether it's true or not, if Jason Jenkins did get an injury here, that puts even more emphasis on you needing James Williams to be a starter against Alabama in game one. So is this a guy that can come in and, you know, he's got a lot of that hype? Is this going to be like a Marvin Jones Jr. type of hype where it's like, all right, well, he looks good on paper, but not so much? Or is this going to be like that Jared Verse or, you know, these guys that have come in and lived up to that hype? And that's so he is one that is very high on my list that I want to see, because, again, we've seen from 23 to 24 the difference a game-changing edge rusher can make.
Absolutely. And again, we need James. We need him to step up to be almost an every down player. Now, again, we know Florida State is really big. Well, I guess they used to be really big on rotating those. So we'll see what that looks like now in Tony's white defense. But we need him to step up and be an everyday down lineman. Now, my number three, I'm going to stay on the defensive line per se. I'm going with Darryl Jackson. Okay. Now, listen, you remember, two seasons ago, they were saying this boy, they couldn't even run practice because he was just disruptive and they had to take him off. Then we finally get to see him. He doesn't really have a great beginning nor a great mid, but then he starts coming on towards the end of the season. And at the Orlando Boosters Club event, Tony White literally said, our biggest recruiting win was getting him to come back. I want to see why this was the biggest recruiting win. I want to see him be dominant this season. I want them to have to scheme the center and the two guards around this guy just to stop him in this new scheme.
Oh, I'm with you, because actually my number four is also Darryl Jackson, because I think for me with Darryl Jackson, you make a lot of good points. Like, he could be a absolute game changer at the nose tackle position. Like, if you go to that odd front, and they will run odd and even front, but if you go to that odd front, obviously you have one defensive tackle lining up in the middle there. And so if you have a guy who's 6 foot six, 330 pounds, who's a fifth year senior or sixth year or whatever he is, because, you know, he had to sit out a year, he could be a game changer for you. Because like you said, man, he was a guy who they said you could barely run practice at times because he was so dominant. Now, was that because he was dominant, or was that because our offensive line was trash? Because we kind of saw that was the case more than anything. And really, for me, I think it's more like this is his money year. Yeah. He's going to be under a new defensive line coach. Is it his time to dominate? And one thing that I've talked about in the past that I don't know that this makes a difference or not, but all of his quote-unquote friends, also known as, I think, distractions are gone, right? There's no more Patrick Payton. There's no more Josh Farmer. Not that Josh Farmer was bad, but there's no Farmer. There's no, you know, that group that kind of held him over the FSU over the fire for the NIL money and all that. All those distractions seem to be gone. Like, he is becoming he's standing on his own two feet this year.
Yeah.
And we heard James Williams talk about Darryl Jackson has stepped up as a leader on the defensive line and across the whole team. So, man, I think it's not so much I'm ready to see what Darryl Jackson can do. It's the fact of that Florida State needs Darryl Jackson to have his best year. And so he's my number two as well, because if he turns out to be what we think he can be, man, that's going to change what this defensive line looks like. So now that was my number four. So I'll let you go ahead with your number four.
Yeah. I'm gonna stay on the defensive side of the ball, but I'm gonna go all the way to the back part of the defense in the safety area, and I'm going with Shaheem Brown. You guys might see a theme here is we need some of these veteran players to be the players they were in 2022, 2023. We need that to come back. And Shaheem is just as important to that. We need to see that ball hawking, knock you to the ground, talk you ish, as they like to say, as the players say, right? And be in the right place, you know, not get moved out of the play, not get blocked by some irrelevant offensive lineman, and you're like 10 yards out of the play, just continue to be blocked all the way to the water boy seat. Like, no, we need to see the Shaheem Brown that was in every play, that had his nose and everything, that was just up there, just giving the business to everybody on the offensive side. And so that's I'm excited for. He's my number four. I think he needs to have a big year this year.
Yeah, man. When I played, I think that's a great choice. When I played football, we used to call it brother-in-law, right? Where like you would just kind of allow yourself to be blocked out of the play. Like, bro, don't put me on my back, but I'm gonna let you block me, right? but I think this would be huge, because obviously you're replacing another safety.
Right.
And so if you could have Shaheem lock down one of those safety positions, then you have more options at the other position there. Yeah. And you have some guys that I like, but you also had some guys that didn't have a great year last year either.
That's right.
And so, I mean, When you look at Shaheem, he was a guy that came into last season, realistically, on a lot of people's list of being a potential all ACC caliber player. Right. I mean, he had really shown flashes of coming up and had a lot of experience. and he had a terrible season last year. Right. And so you really need him, like you said, man, as one of your returning veterans, to really have a much better season than he did last year, because that safety position is so critical. So I think that's a great choice. Shaheem, we really need a big year out of him as well. Now, my number five here, I'm staying in the trenches with another freshman that I'm really, really excited to see, and that is Kevin Wynn.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Not only am I excited to see him because this is Florida State's highest rated defensive tackle recruit in ages. So you kind of get that, like, could this be maybe our Timmy Jernigan 2.0 coming in or something like that? Again, you look at the dominant defensive tackles and the difference that they make in the trenches there. But for me, I think a lot of it is, this is something that we talked about in the spring episode as well. If you were to go to an even front, right, you have Daryl Jackson and Daniel Lyons. And then who? You have a whole lot of unproven guys. Of course, you have KJ Sampson that looked good, but didn't really do anything during the season.
Right.
Grady Kelly moved on, not really missing anything there. But I think for me, that's one where if Kevin Wynn comes in like the guy that we think he can be, he's going to play as a freshman, even if it's as a rotational piece. And if he's good, that's really good for the depth of this defensive line, which is a concern of mine going into the season. Because, you know, as we talked about on that other episode, I think coming out of spring, if you're to hit the portal for somebody, it's defensive line is high on the list. So I think Kevin Wynn is a big one, man. And I'm really excited to see what he can do because, you know, the Navy All-American Bowl, they were making him sit out of practice because he was so dominant. So I'd like to see some of that in spring.
I agree. I think he of all the freshmen coming in, besides Uzma, will need to have a impact time in the spring, because you're going to end up needing him probably more so than you would have if you had had better depth. Now, if they go to the portal, they're able to find, you know, maybe not like a superstar portal defensive lineman, but like a rotational piece that you can trust and count on, then maybe that takes a little bit of pressure off him. But unless they do, I really think he needs to have a big spring. So I totally agree with him being in your top five. My number five is going to be Deuce Robinson. And the reason for that is because Squirrel White, as you mentioned, as your number one, is going to be super important. But this is the guy you went and got. You went all out to go get this dude, okay? And he is supposed to be, hopefully, the guy that helps you on the other side of Squirrel White, however you use him. This guy's going to be able to take the top off. This guy's going to be able to get you that big body down the field, in the middle of the field, doing things, blocking, all those things. Again, Johnny Wilson, like with Keon Coleman, athleticism. Like, that's what you're trying. That's what you're hoping you get in Deuce Robinson. So I'm going to be really curious to see how him and Thomas Castellanos really gel together, if their rhythms are really good together. I'm excited for this offense in the Gus Malzahn way, with the way you're going to be able to run the ball and then go over the top with him. So we'll see. But yeah, he's my number five pick.
And I think that's a very good pick, because I'm excited to see what he can do as well. I mean, we know Gus Malzahn's offense likes to throw the ball downfield.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, he's not going to just burn anybody, right?
Right.
Neither did Johnny Wilson, but you can go up and get the ball. And I think it's important also to remember that, you know, when you have a guy, you can put speed on one side and size and kind of that possession type of receiver on the other side. When you have that guy on one side, like a Johnny Wilson, and then you have that burner, like even like a Pokey Wilson, like you had in 2022, you kind of got to pick your poison. And if you double the guy, because it's obviously any DB he's matched up on is not going to be a fair size advantage, you're going to have to leave Squirrel White probably one-on-one. Or if you double Squirrel White because you can't cover him with speed, you're going to leave him open on one-on-one coverage, which isn't fair. So I'm excited to see what he can do as well. I've seen some people they don't think he's going to be great. And so I think he can be really good, man. I think he can. I think he can be kind of that yin to the yang of Squirrel White. And so I'm excited to see what he can bring as well. Plus, like you said, man, that perimeter blocking is going to be massive in this run-heavy offense. Now, I do have a honorable mention here, and I think that goes without saying that we obviously left your starting quarterback off this list of most excited to see. So my honorable mention is Thomas Castellanos. And the reason I didn't put him on my list was because I think we already know who he is as a player. He's a dynamic runner who has an okay arm that has gotten better with time. I think his arm's better than some people give him credit for. I think when you look at the spring, he's going to be in a green jersey. So his running ability is not really going to be something that you can measure. So you're really going to be looking for things like the intangibles. You're going to be looking for how he performs as a leader, which is something that he's talked about. What does his arm look like? You know, he threw for Deuce Robinson before he committed, and he still committed. So there must have been something there. Really what I'm watching in Thomas Castellanos is not the player himself, but what he looks like in an offense that's built for him, because we know this Gus Malzahn offense is built for that type of skill set. Right. And so that's one thing that I'm really excited to see is we know what we're getting as a player, but we saw him in a Bill O'Brien offense last year. We saw him in an offense in 2023 at Boston College that was kind of like, it wasn't built for him, but they just kind of let him do whatever he could do because he was their best player on their team.
Right.
And so now you just kind of put him in a system that's meant for him to thrive. I'm ready to see what that looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be important, obviously, for the trigger man to be good.
Right.
You know, we have not had, at least last year, we just not had a good trigger man. I mean, it just wasn't. Even when the offensive line, in its rarity, could actually block. I mean, our last quarterback, I saw a picture where there was somebody who's taking tours of the stadium, and this one guy took a picture and he found the exact mark in the stadium where DJ threw the ball over the wide open dude. I think it was the Boston College game. And it hit the stadium. There's like a little crack in the stadium. He found it where he missed the wide receiver wide open and found that crack, okay? When your trigger man is throwing to the brick of the stadium, that's a problem. And so, yes, having to see what Thomas Castellanos can do, having to see his leadership, having to see his accuracy, having to see how he's built rhythms, is he making the right checks? All those things are going to be important for the spring. Now, we're not going to jump off and get crazy. We've already said this, that we're waiting to see what they how they produce on the field against Alabama. But it'll be good to give us a little bit of, like, momentum and feeling good feelings around where he is as this offense continues to develop.
Exactly. Now, let's switch gears here and talk about basketball, because obviously you guys know that Florida State introduced a new basketball coach this season, or coming into the season, after 23 years under Leonard Hamilton. And of course, Florida State has been eliminated from the ACC tournament. So, I mean, you're pretty much looking at it is now the Luke Laux era. And so I know this news is a little bit old, so we're not going to spend a ton of time on it, but we didn't have a chance to share our thoughts on it here. So I'm excited about this hire, right? He comes in, played at Florida State from 2008 to 2012. He obviously has ties to this university. His wife was a swimmer here. I saw where his dad was a walk-on under Bobby Bowden. He grew up a Florida State fan, being a Clearwater, Florida native. So this program means something to him. And I think that's important. You know, obviously, I know sometimes you can get touchy with, you know, just hiring from alumni base, right?
That's
right. Obviously, with Link Jarrett, that worked out pretty well so far. So I think that's important, too. He does bring some youth to the position at 34 years old, where you had Leonard Hamilton, I think, was 72 or 76. So you get that youth movement there, I think, will be more relatable in recruiting with the players. He also brings NBA experience. He's been with the Warriors, the Suns, and most recently the Sacramento Kings there as a defensive coordinator. He did win a couple of titles there with the Warriors, so he's seen it at the highest level, right? He knows what winning championships look like. He's been under Steve Kerr. He's been under some of these big-time NBA coaches. And so I think that he was a fast-rising NBA assistant, right? And so you were able to go get him and bring him back to Florida State because of what this university means to him. Because at the same time, he has not coached in college. He has not been a head coach yet. And so I know there is some trepidation among some FSU fans with this hire. A lot of guys wanted Sam Cassell as well, which you kind of had the same, you know, hiccups there too, not being a head coach and not being in college. But I think when this is something we talked about before, when this was just a rumor, with the resources that Florida State was willing to commit to this basketball program through some of the numbers that we had seen with the revenue sharing, the coaching salary, you weren't going to go out and get a Rick Pitino. You weren't going to go out and get a Dennis Gates from Missouri, who makes $4 million a year when you're paying half of that. So the truth of the matter was you were going to kind of have to try and find a, you know, like a a diamond in the rough type of coach, a guy who was going to come here because he wanted the job, not for the money and the intangibles. And so I do think that for what you committed, this is going to be a good hire. And I watched his introductory press conference, and I thought he said some pretty good things in there. I think the one couple of things that really stood out to me was he sounds like he knows the challenge that's ahead, right? He talked about not going and recruiting head-to-head against the better programs in your conference, like a Duke, like a North Carolina, but instead focusing on the state of Florida. But he also didn't shy away from the challenge of being successful at Florida State. He even said, like, a lot of people told him, hey, man, you know, chill with the championship talk on your open presser because you're going to set that bar really high. And he said, that's not what I'm here for. I'm not here to be good enough. I'm here to win. And so I like that mentality as well. So I think when you talk about it, like you're going to have a guy who has had a history under some Leonard's defenses, was a defensive coordinator there with Sacramento. So you're going to have a defensive guy, a guy who has a history with defense, but more focus on the offense. Because he even said, I'm an offensive guy by nature. The only reason I took this defensive position was because I had spent most of my career learning how to attack defenses.
Right.
And I'm going to let you get into scheme here in just a second because you know way more about basketball than I do. I'm fat, white, and uncoordinated, my man. Basketball and me ain't best friends. I can promise you that. I'll play some defense now.
There you go.
But I was always like, please don't pass me the ball.
Yeah.
So I think right now his big task is going to be you got to build a staff, which he chose not to comment on while Leonard and them were still active.
Right.
You're going to have to acquire some talent and you're going to have to hit the ground running, which I think one thing that he said was like with this portal opening in a couple weeks, he's going to lean on some NBA scouting resources that he has because he said, you know, if you're not 3 days ahead, you're already behind. And so I think he's got a good plan there. So, give me some thoughts on some of the scheme things that he laid out in his opening presser.
Yeah, definitely. Listen, you know, Luke Louts is the choice. And I think that Florida State went and got what they could get. You know, and I think Luke Louts, it was the best they could do. And that's not an indictment. That's not a dig. It's just the best they could do. I think he brings an exciting scheme. He talked about that in his opening press conference. You know, it's going to be a wide open offense. It's going to be a lot of the modern way of playing. You know, Leonard Hamilton was really good defensive coach, but his offenses were, I want to use the word archaic, but they were definitely behind the times.
Right.
Luke is going to bring a more wide open scheme. The NBA, they call it pace and space. So what you're going to see is a lot more players hanging around, hovering around the 3-point line, and maybe one or two players in that paint area, but not much. You're going to see a lot of motion, a lot of moving. So not a lot of standing around, not a lot of ISO. You're going to see a lot of screening. So double screens or what they call stagger screens where you have two guys and you got guys running off a curl of that. You got zoom action. So you're going to see a lot more three-point shooting and a lot more layups. What you're going to see less of, which you saw a lot in Leonard Hamilton's offense, is that mid-range game, that two-point shot. Because a two-point shot, according to analytics right now, is the most inefficient shot in basketball, whether it's NBA or college or even high school. It's inefficient just because you're not used to the way kids are being trained right now. They're shooting layups, they're shooting threes. And so it's the two-point shot is the most inefficient shot right now. And so you're going to see a lot of that. You're going to see believe it or not, you're going to see five men, the center. You're going to see them probably taking more threes than you're probably used to seeing at Florida State. And it's going to be weird. It's going to be jarring. They're going to be jacking up shots. And what's going to happen too, part of this offense, Jesse, before I throw it back to you, is that you're going to have days where this team, however they assemble, now that he's got to go out in the portal, he's got limited NIL resources unless he can, you know, get the Spanx lady to help out there that we've all been trying to get. He's going to have to go get these second-tier portal players who are at these lower, you know, D1 schools, maybe D2s, but they're lighting it up. They can shoot. They can create offense. And what's going to happen with this offense is you're going to see days where, oh my gosh, they're shooting the lights out. They can't miss. It's wild. They're getting layups. They're getting threes. And then you're going to see other days where it's like they can't hit a barn side of a door or whatever the saying is there.
Right.
They're just going to miss because it's a hot or cold offense, but it's the modern way. If you want to go and look at some comparisons so you can get yourself kind of ready, Go see the Alabamas. Go see the Kentuckys. Go see the Oklahomas. Go see those schools that are Florida that are playing. I mean, yeah, right? Like literally 2 hours from you. Florida plays that style of offense as well. That's what's coming to Florida State.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the things that he touched on is this is an offense that he didn't name names, but he said this has been successful at some of the best programs in the country, and yep. you just named a few of them. And yep. so, yeah, I think that's important. Probably will help in recruiting to have that more modern style yep. game so you can develop players for the NBA. And he has been a development guy in the NBA for a long time. So I think, you know, he said he wants guys that are hard-nosed, willing to commit, you know, to spend some time here and go make yep. real money in the NBA who are bought in. He sounds like he's going to set some principles there. And he did talk a lot about those efficient shots. He's like, look, right. in a broad view scheme, you want to create those efficient shots. You want right. the kick out threes, you know, the touch to paint, as he called that's it right. a lot. So that's you right. want to create a lot of those, and you want to keep the other team from getting those. You that's want to right. finish without fouling and things like that. So it sounds to me, it sounds like a good scheme to work. It's just now you have to go out and get the pieces to do it, right?
Right.
And I think the good thing about him being at that Syracuse game is you got an opportunity to scout your team in person to right. kind of see what pieces will work for that offense and maybe what won't. And then yep. maybe you can really know what you need going into next year. That's so right. it'll be interesting. But I'm excited, man. You obviously got to give Leonard props for keeping this program respectable for a really long time. But it was beyond time for a change. So I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, I just want to say this one last thing, and this is really important. This is really key. Michael Alford, kudos to you for making the hire now instead right. of waiting till Leonard Hamilton was actually done. I know you were trying to be very respectful, but it was key because Louts and however he gets his staff together, they will have, you know, a couple weeks to really go out and assess what's in the transfer portal. We've seen coaches be hired after the end of the season, and they only got like a month to put their roster together.
Yeah.
He's going to have time to now actually assess with March Madness and all that going on to assess what players they want to go after and have a plan ready to go that as soon as that transfer portal season's opened up, they can go and attack it. So kudos to Michael Alpha for getting this hire done now.
Yeah, and he did talk about how, you know, they acknowledged that he didn't have coaching experience, but right. they also said that you're looking for the future. You're looking that, man, right. this is the fast rising coach. So this is where we're looking at where he can be in the future. Right. And I think that was important because once you knew that Leonard Hamilton was stepping down after the season, that's you right. could start putting these wheels in motion because it didn't right. make it an awkward situation. And, you know, like you said, now you have a chance where it's almost in a weird kind of way. It's kind of like we talked about last year, where I think almost the best thing for last year was that you didn't kind of stagger out to six wins to make a bowl yeah. where you couldn't, yep. you could jump in the portal right away. You could right. start making these coaching hires right away. Florida State season is over. So now that's you right. can start making that coaching hires. You can start looking at the portal while everyone else is playing. And that's so right. I think that will be a big advantage to you as well. That's something we saw in baseball after that first year under Link Jarrett. Had a terrible season,
that's right.
but they were early to the portal. They that's went out right. and got some big pieces, and then they had a great turnaround season in 2023. So with that right. being said, we're going to stay in the baseball vein and close the show out with some baseball talk here. Obviously, things did not go the way we wanted them to in the Tuesday midweek against Florida. Florida State does drop that game 7-2 for their first loss of the season. The undefeated streak does come to an end. But again, guys, I think it is important to remember that baseball is a funny sport, man. I mean, you look at all these teams that are playing college baseball. At the time we went into that Florida game, there were only two undefeated teams left, and it was Florida State and Tennessee. Not a lot of these teams had lost games to top 10 teams during a right. midweek game. There are teams like Texas A&M losing to Texas State. You know, you had some of these crazy games that had happened. Your first loss came against a top 10 team in a midweek game where your starting pitcher went out in the second inning.
Right.
So it's not anything I would say to freak out about. Now, with that being said, I do think you raised some red flags, right, in this game. You saw some things that were a little bit concerning for me. You know, maybe this does look different if they have to go against your weekend rotation because Florida State's pitching weekend rotation is one of the best in the country, right?
Right.
Florida had a better midweek pitching setup than you did. They had a guy who was Clemson's starter last year for a midweek game, and Clemson's a daggone good baseball program.
Yep.
So you just got outpitched, right, on that aspect. But regardless of what the pitching rotation they would have faced, man, the truth is the offensive struggles is what stood out more than anything. And that's something that we were worried about when they got when they went against better competition. I mean, these guys that they were bringing in for Florida, they're throwing 96, 97 miles an hour.
That's right.
You weren't seeing that type of velocity against some of these smaller programs that you started the season against. And so you just really have to get some things figured out on offense. You only scored 2 runs on 6 hits. You had Lodice and Max Williams were combined 0 for 7. The team only drew 2 walks all game. And I think a lot of that had to do with they were just trying to do too much at the plate, trying to hit the cover off the ball, trying to hit home runs. They have to keep in mind what they're good at, and that's the small ball approach. That's getting on base, putting pressure on teams on the base path, and they seem to get away from that. Yeah. So the other thing that I did notice, I did see a little bit of lack of fire in this game. Now, obviously, you don't want to let your emotions get out of control, right? But I saw some guys that were hanging their heads a little bit early when they got down by a few runs. And so you're going to need some of these veteran leaders like a Lodice, like a Drew Ferreau, like a Max Williams to really kind of put this team on their back going forward to where adversity hits, you don't hang your head. You're like, Okay, man, we're still in this fight. And so that's something that I noticed too. But again, man, well, and besides that, the home plate ump was pretty trash. Yeah. But that's neither here nor there. But, you know, you dealt with some injuries and things like that. And again, Florida is a good team as well. They were 15-2 coming in that game. They were number 7 in the country. And so I think at the end of the day, this is still a very good baseball team with a lot of baseball left to play. It's a long season. You just have to respond this weekend against Boston College. But right. At the end of the day, man, you face the Gators again in 2 weeks in Jacksonville. That's right. So That's you right. have a chance to get back at them. So, man, give me some thoughts on that, on what you saw out of that Florida game, and then we'll talk a little bit about Boston College and we'll wrap the show up.
Yeah, you know, listen, you're not going to go undefeated in baseball. I don't think that's ever happened in college baseball. And if so, then I'm wrong. But I don't think right. you are. And yeah. what I saw of this game is, yes, I saw that Florida has some really good midweek pitching better than they had last season when we swept them during the midweek series, right? So yep. they went and did what they needed to do. They upgraded their midweek pitching. On the other side, we saw that our offense ran into some troubles, right? So there was I won't call them red flags. I'd call them yellow-ish orange flags. And this is an opportunity for Lincoln, that staff, to say, okay, now that we've seen where the holes are, now we have to work on it. We have to work on what does it look like? Are we taking good swings at good pitches? Are we taking some risk around those pitches? Are we seeing the ball well? Like all those different things, as well as what does our bullpens look like? What is our midweek? Yep. Do we need to tweak our midweek rotation? Do we need to look at our catcher situation, right? Because that's really important, right? We can't be throwing balls in the dirt, but we also got to catch those balls in the dirt. Yeah. So I think these are all great opportunities for Lincoln, that staff, to say, okay, that's okay. It's one game. Now, do we, you know, John Calipari, when he used to coach for Kentucky, he used to say, you either win or you learn. Well, Link, you either win or you're learning. And you've learned from this game. Okay, here's some things we've got to work on. Let's get back in the lab. Let's work on this as we walk into this Boston College series. And now we get into ACC play, which is going to be just as hard and just as tough. Yep. And it'll help you grow in that sense. So I'm not deterred or discouraged. Yes, those are things who are concerning, but concerning to the point of like, I trust Link to be able to work through that. I mean, we saw some of this happen last season as well. And look what ended up happening. It was a great season. Right. I think they can get back in the lab and fix some of this stuff.
100%. Because, I mean, you had a lot, let's face it, you had a lot of bad teams to start the season and you beat up on them. And then you had a top 10 team come to your doorstep and you know, you lost. And so like, this is where you're like, okay, well, this is a measuring stick. We know we got to get better, but this is still one of the best teams in college baseball. And the way you prove that is by responding. And that starts this weekend in conference play against Boston College. Now, Boston College comes in at 7-6. And you want to talk about baseball being a crazy sport? Boston College is literally the definition of doesn't make any sense, right? They have losses to New Orleans, a series loss against New Orleans. They lost against South Carolina Upstate, Richmond, and Longwood University.
Wow.
But they also just went on the road to Charlottesville and beat a top 10 ranked UVA team. They won the series there, 2-1. Obviously, they did lose one of the games, but UVA put up 22 runs in that game to win. Now they put up 16. So this is one of them where, like, man, it just goes to show you that conference play is a different animal, right? And like you talked about, ACC play is going to be just as hard. Because when you come into this, I mean, again, like we talked about that wacky weekend, that open conference play last weekend when you played Lipscomb. You had Stanford went on the road and beat undefeated North Carolina. You had Duke got swept by or got run ruled by Cal. So things, man, you got to bring your A game every weekend in conference play, but you don't have to sweep every single series. You just got to get the series win. So if you can get 2-1 out of this. Now, looking at Boston College versus FSU this weekend, just some quick numbers that you need to know here. Batting average, Boston College is hitting .297 on the season, which is 74th, to Florida State at .336, which is 9th. Scoring as far as runs per game, Boston College is at 8.6. So they're scoring some runs now, 43rd. Florida State is at 8.9, 36. So they're scoring pretty decent here.
Yeah.
Again, they put up 16 runs in a loss to UVA. Now, here is where you win the game, Michael. And this is something that we've talked about with Florida State baseball all season. You are not banking on your offense to win like you did last year. You are pitching and defense. ERA, you have a landslide advantage. Boston College's ERA, team ERA, is 7.71, which is 225th. Oh, Florida State is at 2.68, which is 5th. So this is where you win this game. Fielding percentage, Boston College, you have an advantage there. They've had 15 errors in 12 games. You've had 12 and 16. So this is a pitching and defense type of series for Florida State. And on the subject of pitching, Joey Vellini will start on Friday night for Florida State. Jamie Arnold will pitch on Saturday, and Wes Mendez will finish things up on Sunday, according to Link Jarrett. The reason that is because next week's Miami series begins on Thursday, so that puts Jamie Arnold back onto his normal Friday spot. So, again, man, this is a series where you rely on that pitching, you rely on that defense, and you do enough on offense. You come out, you get the series win, maybe a series sweep, and you feel good about yourself. You got Miami and Florida coming up again here close, so you got some big games coming up. But, man, you get back in the win column. You get back feeling good about yourself, and all is right in the world with this baseball team. So it's a big series, though, because you don't want to let that Florida loss beat you twice.
Correct.
And you end up losing the series to Boston College, because that's going to be a terrible look, because you have a much harder schedule down the road.
That's
Come back. You get the series win. Everything will be all right.
Yeah, it's important to get off to a really good start in the ACC, and you want to go into this Boston College series, take the learnings you got from Florida, apply them to Boston College. Listen, they're not great pitching. You should be able to hit them. You should be able to get some runs scored, and then you should be able to pitch well against them and get out of there. Look, 2 or 3 is great. Sweeping would be fantastic. And here's the other thing for me, Jesse. Dadgummit, they have a 2-game win streak in Tallahassee right now. Boston College does. We got to get back on the win. The last 10 games we played against them, Florida State is 5-5. We should not be 5-5 in the last 10 games against Boston College. So let's get off the schneid. Let's stop the win streak they have at Dick Houser, and let's get on that win streak, and let's just start the ACC play well. That way we get into that Miami series, we get into the rest of the ACC, and now we've got momentum building.
Couldn't have said it better myself, man. So that's going to be it for today's show. We appreciate you guys watching. Drop a like and subscribe if you enjoyed this content. We are really close to 2,000 subscribers. You know, we've been pushing for this for a while. I think we're only about 50 away, so that would be great if we could cross that 2,000 mark. We appreciate you guys for watching. We appreciate you guys for sharing and telling other people about the podcast. Rate and review as far as podcast audio-only form helps as well. So appreciate you guys doing that. Make sure you also check out plantthespear.com, our website, where all of our videos are. I'm getting ready to drop a spring article. Of course, we have baseball articles going up there as well. So thanks, guys, for watching. We will catch you on the next one. And as always, go Noles.